or no, John, I signed up for it years ago, but I ain't smart enough to run it, I guess. And when I was back in Kansas many years ago, we've been here about 15 this year. But I never did. It's very interesting. I was coming up Highway 101 here towards the house one day and talking to a guy in Australia, and he was really nice. Really enjoyed the QSO, you know, a VK. And then there used to be a fella on from England quite often that talked to somebody that he knew here in Greenville. And if he'd call several times and no joy, well, then I would call him. You know, I didn't want to interfere with him and his friend. And he'd always come back. He was a real nice guy, but not a whole lot. But I've done some with it, but I never did transmit on it.
This is KN4RJM. Yeah, I talked to a guy in England here. Oh, it's been a while. I was just kind of bopping around EchoLink, listening and seeing if anybody was out there. And this guy was a school teacher, and he had his class there, and he was introducing them to, you know, radio. And so I chatted with some of his students and him, and it was quite a thing. He had his class in there, and we're talking about, you know, radio and EchoLink and all that kind of happiness, and asking him, you know, what do you want to be when you grow up type thing, and we had a good little conversation there for a while.
Roger, that's fun. This guy here now is really light. He's in North Macedonia, but I talked to him on this band the other night on CW. Oh, but I was trying to copy a guy on conversational CW. There's a reason I missed you when you first called for me. And I had shut the VHF down, and man, was he going about where I like, about 28 words a minute, but conversational CW is much different than just giving them a 599 or the normal, you know, your RST and your QTH and all of that. When you start carrying on a conversation, it's a booger. He was on 160. I just wanted to see if I could hear him, because he's just now getting into 160 time of year, you know. But now Patrick does a lot of the digital stuff, and I guess you can do that with a handy talk, and it's worldwide.
This is KN4RJ. Yeah, carrying on a conversation, CW is about like trying to carry on a conversation with, you know, text message. You know, it's a whole lot I can talk a whole lot faster than I can type. and it's a whole lot easier because I don't have to worry about spelling the words right. But, yeah, and EchoLink actually has you can get an app on your phone to do EchoLink, and I do that sometimes when I'm away from the computer. So, you know, you can carry your phone around and do EchoLink off of the phone, off your smartphone. But yeah, there's a whole list of repeaters on EchoLink from all over the world of who's operating on EchoLink and when they are and all that kind of stuff. So, but yeah, I've got an Alaska Net. I've got one that's called All Nets All the Time. I can't even read that. AR net. That might be a weather thing. And then the Dewdrop in. And there's one guy on here. His repeater's named is More Beer, and he's usually off. I guess he's out drinking beer. And then there's a Canada wide net. Just the ones that I've got up. So, and of course this net. But yeah, you might check out EchoLink. It's kind of neat. You know, it's. Some people think it's cheating doing doing radio through the computer, but hey, whatever works for you. You know, it's like like I said, I've just got my little 2-meter rig, but I can still talk to anybody in the world through EchoLink, so it's kind of neat.
Oh, I think EchoLink's great because you can actually have a conversation with it and meaningful, you know, person to person, but. This FT8 and all that, I'm old, John, and I just don't... It's, the computer's doing the work. But Echo Link, you can actually have a personal conversation, same as Sideband or CW. But you get to be old, you get to be an appliance operator, too, and I think I get lazy or ignorant by complacency. I don't want to do it because I'm sure I could. But, yeah, it's a fine mode. I really enjoy talking on my VHF radio to Australia and England and wherever. I haven't heard too many come in on this repeater on it. But I'm sure on some of the other ones. I looked at it briefly, and that was about the size of it years ago. Occasionally I'll get in on a conversation. You mentioned talking to those students. I was talking to a fellow in Micronesia one night from Kansas. I'd stay up late on the weekends when I didn't have to work. And, you know, 10, 11, 12, 1 o'clock. And I'd be out in my garage not bothering anybody. And Bernice, she had a little sewing business. Night owls. And he had a group of college students. And this island they were on in Micronesia, I forget which one it is now. I got a card from him. But he was taking the students inland, where there wasn't much once you got across the mountains there to the inland, and they was doing research. And that was one of the nicest conversations I had. And I've had some in Tasmania. And it's amazing how many different types of areas there are in Australia, but most of them, of course, are on the perimeter. There's not much inland, but I did have a nice chat with a guy there at Springs, I forget what it is, at quickly down under, was made right there where he was at, and I talked to him for quite a little while one time. And that's right out in the middle of Australia. I mean, you know, you can zoom in on it on 2RZ, on satellite. I mean, there's nothing out there but snakes. And but it was very interesting. I always enjoy that.
This is KN4RJ, and yeah. Now, you get away from the coast of Australia, and you're, when they call it the outback, they're not kidding. There, it's there's not a whole lot out there. It's a whole lot of dry and a whole lot of snakes and alligators and various other unique and wondrous things that want to bite you, eat you, or otherwise, you know, do you harm. yeah, I've always wanted to go to Australia, just to see it, and go to a country where I can almost speak the language. I had an instructor when I was in the Army. I had an instructor that was Australian officer, and he used to say, "Gentlemen, we are separated by a common language. If you don't understand me, I can say it another way. I can phrase it with different words, but I cannot speak American." So it's like, yeah, okay. That was fun.
One thing I liked about him, when I was in the carrier aircraft, and I was in VS-41, that was the training squadron in San Diego. They were training Aussies to be the instructors, and I have so much great admiration for them because, buddy, they were the most precise, hardcore, strict people I've ever been around in my life. I mean, it was amazing what they put you through. And I guess they were trying to be good instructors. But there was only four of us on that plane, a pilot, co-pilot, and he was the tactical coordinator, and then seat 3 and seat 4. And I think I was in seat 3 at the time, running radar, electronic countermeasures, magnetic anomaly detection, and sniffer. And he was sitting in seat 4, Boy, you better not miss anything. I mean, if a submarine was out there and he pulled the plug and went down, he wanted to know how many seconds it was till you got to where that submarine went down. And it better be conveyed to the pilot and the co-pilot real quick-like. But they were great people. They do not like to be... I've talked to them on the radio, and I mentioned one night, I said, you know, sometimes I can't differentiate when I first make contact between England and Australia. Don't ever say that, John. They never forgot that used to be an English penal colony.
Yeah, this is KN4RJN. There's a joke. Guy sitting in a bar, and these two ladies are over there, and sitting next to an American, and a couple of UK ladies sitting there, and said, "Excuse me, are you two ladies from I think he said Scotland or something like that?" And they both holler at him and says, "Wales." And he says, "Oh, are you two whales from Scotland?" He said, "Doesn't remember anything after that."
Yeah, he made it very clear that you don't do that, Tom. But it was pretty neat. And I talked to a guy in Tasmania one night for probably close to an hour, and he assured me that those Tasmanian devils weren't anything like what was in the Bugs Bunny cartoons, you know, or whatever it was, Looney Tunes.
This is KN4RJN. Yeah, they... Yeah, not quite, but yeah, they tend to be a little sensitive about that. They are not from England, and you can tell the difference. We were somewhere in England when I was stationed in Germany. We'd made a trip over there, went to this conference, and there was this cute little gal sitting across the table from me at this big banquet table, and she was Scottish. And my wife's sitting next to me, and she's talking and whatnot. And I leaned over to my wife. I said, "I could listen to her all night long, but I haven't got a clue what she's saying. I couldn't understand a word she was saying." And she said, "Yeah, well, I can't either." I said, "Okay, well, it's not just me." But it was like, I mean, she was just rattling on and on and on about something, and and she allegedly was speaking English, but I could not understand what she was saying about half the time.
This is Gerald T.R. Well, when I went up, I asked for duty with my brother, and when I transferred up to Moffett Field up by Mountain View, California, the Australian pilots, they had a kangaroo on the side of their P-3 Orions. They were training there. And I didn't go up with them. I think it might have just been the pilots and the co-pilots. And we had a newspaper there that was published. And I got a couple of pages out of it here someplace. But at any rate, you come in right over a golf course. One of them wound up landing at a golf course one time, I was told. I didn't see it. It wasn't during my time. But I could see where it would be very possible because we were right on the ocean front, or the bay. And when you took off, you was over water immediately, kind of like San Diego North Island was. But at any rate, they come in, and I forget what caused it, but I think they must have collapsed the landing gear or something, or brake fires are real bad on airplanes, too. They can cause fire real quick. Hit the fuel tanks and that. And just tell you how gutsy those Australians were. That plane landed at about 140 knots, John. It weighed 140,000 pounds. And it carried 9,500 gallons of JP. When it landed, it was on fire and collapsed on that. I think it was on the right side. And this guy, one of them that was inside, everybody, you went out the back door, the hatch, or out over the wing, I should say, and we'd slide down the wing on the flaps, and they'd lower the flaps in an emergency, which they were usually down anyways, coming in for a landing. But they've simulated emergencies, you know, when they're training pilots, and I've been on training flights, and if they don't depressurize the plane or something, well, the crew's dead because they can't get out when it's pressurized. And that happened once, I remember, when they were doing the check ride. One of those Aussies, as he was coming out and that plane was on fire, he was the last one out, and he was photographing the fire inside of that airplane as he come out of the hatch and slid down to the runway. Now, you know, that's pretty gutsy.
This is KN4RJN, yeah. Well, a plane that size, going that speed, landing on a golf course, I bet he left a hell of a divot.
Wasn't the one that landed on the golf course. I wasn't there then, but I was there when this happened, but I did not see it. I don't know if I was on duty or what, but I didn't see it at all. But I saw it in the paper that they published, and everybody was talking about it there on the base. But it was on the runway, hard surface. There was a 10,000-foot runway there, if I remember rightly, right by Ames Research. Oh, they've shut down the Navy base there. But no, they landed on the runway all right. You come right over Highway 101, right over the fence, and you're over the threshold. It was a big four-lane highway. And there were blimp hangars there, three of them. And one blimp hangar was 200 feet tall, hangar one. But at any rate, they landed on concrete, and it was on fire. And as he was coming out the back door, he was still shooting pictures as he jumped. And they had some pictures in the paper, but I don't remember. It's been 50-some years ago, John. But they are very staunch people in the military. And if I was China, I'd be like that flag that says, don't tread on me. I'd leave the Aussies alone.
This is KN4RJN. Yeah, they're other than that one Australian instructor I had, I've never had the pleasure of serving with any of those guys. But we had an engineering training thing, multinational. We had Germans and French and the Americans and let's see who else. We had a couple guys from the UK, whatnot, and. And Canadians, and the one thing I took away from it is a week-long training thing of engineer officers from all over Germany there. And one thing I learned in that training thing was never go drinking with a Canadian. Those boys can suck it down like like nobody's business. And then there's one Canadian, they called him Moose, because that's about how big he was. And of course, you know, I'm 5'4", and at the time about 130 pounds. And me and him hit it off real good, which was fortunate. Because if we hadn't, he could have folded me in half like a paperclip. But big guy. But man, could he drink. Lord. and basically all of them could. There's a couple nights there I just don't remember anymore because I went out with those guys. But yeah, Canadians are a lot tougher than they look.
Well, John, I never did have that experience with the Canadians, but I can tell you this much, the Germans are that way too, like the Aussies. Great engineers. I worked on a helium leak detector for 4 years at a wheel plant, actually 3 years. I worked on cranes for a year, and I did the preventative maintenance on it, or if it break. And it would suck a sample of helium, and they'd try to suck it through the porosity of the aluminum. This was after the wheel was made, and a robot put it on the conveyor, and it'd come into this German helium leak detector, and it would detect the leak. If it sucked a sample through that, the porosity was bad. And it went down to a spectrum analyzer. No, not a spectrum analyzer. Oh, dang it. I forget. It's the same thing my nephew was using up at GU for looking at molecules and smaller At any rate, if it sensed that down there, it could detect a leak that would take your wheel 7 years to go down. And that's pretty small. And it would kick it out and go back to the melt. But, man, that was a whale of a machine. And the guys that were there before me, the two that were trained with the Germans, I didn't get that. That would have been nice, put it that way. But I still had to fix it. But these guys helped me learn it. And they were saying how strict and exact and precise these fellas were. And so I have a lot of respect for German engineers, too.
This is KM4RJN. Yeah, it's, you go. I had one guy tell me he went into a German automotive shop one time. He had a BMW, I'm not sure. Went in there, and, you know, you think of a, you know, normal American, you know, maintenance garage, you know, everybody's, you know, covered in grease, and, you know, floor's covered in grease, and they're doing their thing. He said everybody in there, the floor was spotless. You could eat off of it. Everybody's wearing white coats. You'd think they were doctors. And there wasn't a spot of grease or soil anywhere. And he said it was just, it was amazing. But I don't know how much he embellished on that, but I could see that happening.
University of Michigan, after 5 years there, she went on a Rotary scholarship to Vienna and studied music there, but they only spoke German, and she said, oh, they're strict then. And she thought she was pretty cocky, you know, taking German through college, but you need to live it to really get fluent at it, and she found that out. Because they didn't speak any English in the university there, the Hochschule für Musik. And she called me and Mom the first week she was there, and she was crying. She said, Dad, how do I get myself into these situations? But she made it, and then she came back and taught 4 years in school in Michigan, and then her husband did a job in Frankfurt, and she went back and got another 4-year degree at the Hochschule for Music in Frankfurt. So now she's got a lot of German friends up there in the Detroit area. They live southwest, I think it is, in West Bloomfield. But they sit around and talk German like you and I talk English. And she taught our granddaughter. She only spoke to her in German until she was in the ninth grade. And they'd be talking, and they'd turn right around and talk to you in English, but when they were talking to each other, it was always in German. So that's making it pretty easy for her now, doing a minor in it at the University of Ohio State University. And she's, oh, heck, I can't tell you what she's majoring in. It's business. But the minors in that, and she does quite well at it, John. She knows the language well. She still had to learn a lot of the, you know, finer points of English, and only in German, whatever I'm trying to say. But at any rate, she's getting along fine with it.
This is KM4RJN. Yeah, when I was stationed in Germany, my two little girls were, 5, 7, somewhere around in there. And we lived out away from where most of the Americans congregated there in Nuremberg. and there was a little German preschool that we sent them to. And of course, they only spoke German there. So the kid, my younger daughter especially, picked it up pretty quick and held on to it. And then she later, after high school, she went over and did an exchange student thing over in Germany. And she told me one of the classes, you know, and she was taking classes there, and one of the classes was Latin. She says, here I am, an American, trying to learn Latin in German. She said, that was that was fun. but she had a good time over there. And she speaks German, and of course when she came back after having, she was over there for a year, and after she came back, it's like she forgot English, you know. Everything was a thing. You know, can you hand me that thing there sitting on top of the other thing there that, you know, it's like she forgot all her nouns. I could figure out what it was. And but she eventually got over that. But, yeah, she speaks German, English, and I think there was another language she was working on. I can't remember now. It might have been Russian. But so, anyway. But, yeah, you learn it as a child. It works easier than trying to learn it as an adult. The only Spanish I can speak is, you know, Taco Bell and enchilada. And I can order a beer in about 6 different languages, but other than that, you know, it's that's about the extent of it for me.
Found out early on when I was in the service, when I was about in my early 20s, I went to a bachelor party and my buddies made me drink beer, and they come home and just unloaded me in the front yard. Bernice says, if you ever come home like that again, the door will be locked and you'll never get back in. So I ain't never done that, John. But, because I think she meant it, and she's pretty soft-hearted. But I'm a cheap drunk. I can't drink. I can drink a half of a Miller Lite or Michelob Lite or something, and I can feel it. And I don't see anything wrong with it. Our kids drink wine. They got wine from all over the world. The ones up there in Michigan, they used to go to all the chateaus and things in France on the weekends when they weren't working. And they had quite a collection of wine when they come back. And I just can't do it. So the only thing I ever did is... one time I was going to school in Jacksonville, because the little old lady at the package store couldn't figure out my driver's license because it had all of the restrictions on it from Kansas. So I'd buy it for these guys. And we had the duty one night, and the football field was just right across the street from us. And they wanted to go over there, and so I bought the alcohol and gave it to them. And I told him I didn't want any of it. I just sitting up in the bleachers. I said, I wouldn't even know what to drink. They said, oh, Tom, heck, we'll just let you try one of each. And they had black and white scotch, Seagram 7, and Seagram's VO, and 10 High, and vodka. And they had me take a sip of each one. And they wound up dragging me back across the street up that steel ladder to my bed, my bunk. And they had short-sheeted the bunk and throwed sand in it, John. That's nice to have buddies like that.
This is KN4RJ, and yeah, friends like that, you don't need enemies, yeah. But, yeah. Oh, Lord. Well, Tom, I'm going to let you go. I'm going to go down and see if I can find another pain pill. Possibly take another muscle relaxer so I can go to sleep. And then I'll, let's see, what time is it here? 20 to 11. That means I'll wake up about 2 in the morning when the thing wears off. And all my... Sorry, bud, into the bathroom, get another pill, go to the bathroom and see if I can go back to sleep. I've been getting up at 3, 4, 5 o'clock whenever the pill wears off. And it doesn't just wear off. I mean, it just stops. Okay, it's like flipping a light switch. You know, I'm fine, and then all of a sudden the pill wears off. Boom. Ah, oh, Lord, does that hurt, you know, type thing. So hopefully that's just me. I'm hoping Bernice isn't listening. And it doesn't affect her the same way, but yeah, when that pain med wears off, it wears off. You know, it's like flipping a light switch, I swear. But and I think my light switch just flipped. So I'm gonna say goodnight to you, Tom. You take care. Give me a call when she gets home. Let me know how she's doing. And we'll talk at you later, there, buddy. This is KN4RJN73s, man.
She's quite a ways over there in the basement. We got a full basement. Were you in the military when you was overseas, John? Right quick, and I'll let you go.
It is KN4RJN. Yeah, I was in the Army. I was stationed in Greece, Turkey, Germany, Oklahoma, Maine, Texas, Virginia. I'm probably missing one in there somewhere. Not necessarily in that order, by the way. But, yeah, I was all over the place. and I was only stationed on Fort something twice. I was stationed at Fort Belvoir for my my basic course, and I was stationed at Fort Bliss for a while. And then every other time I was either at an Air Force base or a naval base or a NATO headquarters or, you know, something. But actually stationed in Nuremberg at Merrill Barracks, which Merrill Barracks is still there, but we're not. back when there were two Germanys, and we used to run targets up on the border and that kind of fun stuff. But yeah, you sound like you've had an interesting military career. Most of my career was either building stuff or blowing stuff up. So such as it is. But yeah, I was all three of my kids. They were born in the United States, but conceived in different countries. So. One in Germany, one in Greece, and where was the other one? I can't remember where we were now. I think my son was actually conceived. I think we were in New Mexico at the time. But in any event, again, Tom, you take care of her, and you know, it's going to hurt. For a while, anyway. But you have a good evening there, brother. KN4RJN, 73s, clear.
Bless you. Thank you for your service. No, I was just in the short four-year tour, you might say. Anyways, and I can tell by what you said, you was in 20 or more years. My cousin's up Carlisle, Pennsylvania. He taught upper colonels, like colonels and colonels, tactics when he was there, and he parachuted into Panama, the other little island down there that they rescued the college students from, and also he was a battalion commander in Iraq of 900 troops, and he retired at 30 years, and he didn't like that. My other cousin, who lives in Florida now, he was a JAG lawyer, and he was a Fulbert colonel. But I was just an E5, John. I was an enlisted man. But you'll have to tell me more about that. I think Don, the 82nd Airborne colonel, he was also in the Hawk Missile Squadron, I think they call it, whatever it is. Anyway, you take care. I'll let you go tonight, and we'll have something to discuss later on. Pleasure's all mine. It's really been nice, John. KN4RJ and GeraldGR 73. I hope you get to feeling better.
KN4RJ, you and me both, brother. You have a good night. KN4RJ clear.